ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is Good Humans Podcast with me, Cooper Chapman, chatting to the world's best about the inspiring stories that got them to where they are today.
What's going on, you good humans? Welcome to guest episode 134 of Good Humans Podcast. This is going to be the last episode for 2023, and I cannot thank you all enough for tuning into this podcast. It's been such a special year for me. I've had so many incredible conversations with experts in every different field you can think of, social media stars to neuroscientists to just stories that you will not believe. And it is all thanks to you guys. Everyone who's tuned into this podcast throughout the year, I cannot thank you all enough. It's been such a special journey for me. And yeah, I cannot wait to continue bringing you guest episodes into 2024. If you can do me a huge favor, go and hit that like or subscribe button if you haven't already. Or most importantly, do me a little Christmas gift. Give us 5 stars and leave us a little review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can review each episode. It means the world to me. And yeah, it does a lot for the podcast going into next year. Also, a huge thank you to our sponsors, Drinkarepa. These guys have sponsored the podcast all year, and I cannot thank them enough. My brain feels so good using their product, and I know so many of yours do too. If you haven't learned about the product before, it's a brain drink. They have a few other different products where they have these amazing, amazing formula of a New Zealand blackcurrant berry, L-theanine, and also a pine bark extract, all developed by neuroscientists, worked super hard to make sure this stuff works. And yeah, I love it every single day. So head over to their website, drinkarepa.com, use the code GOODHUMAN and you get a big 25% off over there. Big thanks to them. Also, a big thank you to everyone who has grabbed some merch already, but the new merch is still plenty left. We've got a big range of stock and we've got so many new shirts. So if you want to check out what we're doing here at the Good Human Factory with my mental health workshops, with the merch and everything else, head over to thegoodhumanfactory.com. You can look at the whole range. There's a bunch of really cool new designs. We've got 9 new designs on all of the shirts, whole bunch of new colors, a really wide range of sizes now as well. So head over, go support the podcast, use the code podcast and you get a big 25% off all of the merch. I love seeing all of you legends who listen to the podcast grabbing some merch too, spreading around your community, because that's what the Good Human Factory is all about. As much as I'm hosting this podcast, it's about you guys getting out there, learning from the podcast, sharing it with the people in your life. And yeah, hopefully the merch can help spread some of those positive messages as well. So go use that code podcast and you can learn all about the workshops over on the website as well. All right, today's episode, Eric Tomlinson. This guy has been a friend of mine for a very long time. I met Eric when I was about 15 or 16 years old over in America in the surf industry. He's a couple years older than me and a few of my mates from surfing in Australia. We're good friends with Eric over there. And then, yeah, we became friends for such a long time. But I love getting to know his story because we're good mates, I'd say, but I definitely didn't know the ins and outs of his journey. I kind of just knew who he worked for. And yeah, that was about it. But we were definitely mates along the journey. So getting to go deep into, yeah, each stage along his journey, I really love getting to know Eric's story in the way that he knew he kind of wasn't going to quite get to where he wanted to in surfing, but then he created a career in the surf industry, working for the top brands, working with all of his friends, working with top athletes, and creating a path where he got to live a free and happy life. He's now Chris Lake's tour manager, which is why we caught up recently, as we had Chris Lake on the podcast last week. He's also working for this incredible brand called Juneshine, which is an alcoholic kombucha. But just the journey along the way, the ups and downs, and how he's navigated to, yeah, living a life full of purpose and really, yeah, doing some stuff that he loves is really, really cool. So let's jump into the chat. If you do enjoy it, make sure you tag both me and Eric on your Instagram. I've got his name and Instagram in the show notes, so go check that out. But yeah, this is a great episode to learn some things if you want to build on your career, if you want to get into marketing, if you want to just live a life by design and get to do some really fun stuff. You're going to love this episode. So let's jump into it. Welcome to Good Humans Podcast, Eric Tomlinson.
How you going, bro?
Good. Thanks for having me. Excited to chat.
Man, it's nice to catch up. You don't get over to Australia too much. We've been friends for a really long time, and it's nice when you've had friends from like one industry and then you kind of mold into a whole new life. Like there's not many people in the surf industry that are still mates with me that I kind of get to run into a bit, but you're one of the ones that seems to still be there that kind of has morphed into this new world that we're living in.
Yeah, it's kind of all just gone from one thing to the next naturally. It was just like a weird thing that went from surfing to this and music and the overlap and like family and friends. And it's such a cool thing to like, yeah, I mean, I used to spend far more time in Australia and absolutely love the Goldie and a lot of parts of Australia. So it's nice to have a few days to be here and hang out and catch up and see everyone and get to chat and do this. It's really fun.
Yeah, I'm excited to have this chat because we've been friends probably, I reckon since like the first time I went to California to like surf when I was sponsored by Hurley.
Yeah.
And you would have been working for Surfline then, I think.
I might have been Globe then, or maybe it was Surfline.
Was it Surfline before Globe?
No, it was Globe and then Surfline and then back to Globe.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was, so maybe it was
Globe
twice.
The first time. But yeah, so when I was like 16, sponsored by Hurley, I'd go over to America for the US Open of Surfing, and you were already friends with like Cruzy and Jack Freestone and
yeah,
a few of the older guys from Australian surfing. And then, yeah, we became mates and that's 13, 14 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's crazy how fast time goes. I know. How many different things happen in that time frame. But yeah, I think that was probably about that long ago when you'd come over for that stuff. And yeah, just got to know those guys. And I feel like every time somebody would come over that was good or somebody that they felt like, they'd be like, oh yeah, come over. And like, I'd get introduced to people and then yeah, friendships kind of blossom. And then you were living with friends over there and staying with people that like I knew and the overlap was there and just, but yeah, it's crazy. It's been that long now.
And I love that it went from that. And now right now we're sitting at my sister and Fisher's house in Palm Beach because you're over here and you're the tour manager of Chris Lake, who would have been previously come out on this podcast, one of the best musicians in the world. And yeah, he went from the surf industry to now doing that full time as well as marketing with Juneshine, an amazing kombucha brand or alcohol, hard kombucha.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit of both. America. Yeah, started as hard kombucha and then now canned cocktails and a little bit of everything. But yeah, I just, again, it's I've been super lucky to be around people that are always doing cool and creative things. And that's just friendships that have blossomed. I mean, anything from like you doing this to, yeah, Fish going into the music world and really going headstrong into that from like surfing and everything else, or all those different things, or Brett, his manager, or anyone like that I've just been friends with that naturally have like gone in different paths and somehow I've been there and been an opportunity to be able to learn and like get into different industries and things that like, I mean, again, I think for me, surfing is probably one of the biggest things that's opened so many doors. It's just an aspirational sport that people look at it from around the world and go like, oh, that's cool. And then being a part of that in my own way, just opened a lot of doors and I met a lot of people and friends like yourself and just getting to do things that are really fun and like I'm passionate about. And I'm like, oh, that's sweet to be able to do something and learn and do, even starting like, you know, very low on like the totem pole of like what you're doing in a space, but being able to do that and it's still something fun and that you enjoy and trying to learn and just keep building in like those industries has been something that like I truly enjoy. Instead of just being like, cool, I was a marketing director, I should always just keep going higher. It's like, here's a whole new industry that I can try and like cut my teeth in and try and see if like I fit, do I work? And I've been able to find a couple opportunities and Chris has given me so many opportunities and the team. So it's like, yeah, it's super fun.
It's really cool. That's why I'm excited, because we're going to kind of move our way chronologically through your life, because I know there's going to be some moments in there where, yeah, you're kind of probably thrown into the deep end. Like, I don't know what I'm doing working for an alcohol company, but I used to be in the marketing of a shoe company, so maybe I can use some ideas. And I guess marketing all comes under a pretty similar umbrella, and it really comes back to network and relationships. And that's what I can see you do so well. You have such a great way to just communicate with people and make things happen, and logistics and the crossovers from what you probably learned in the surf industry now have so many similarities across to what you do now. I actually find that as well with what I do now with my keynote speaking and stuff. The best thing that I've learned is how to like organize yourself for travel really well. Because of surfing, I always booked everything myself. I see friends go on like holidays that are like using like Flight Center or like using like a booking thing. And I'm like, oh my God, because of like my history, like I've never missed a flight in my life. I've never booked the wrong one with a thing with my work now. So it's like when you can cross something over from one industry, it's so helpful.
Yeah, it's a huge thing. And traveling is, it's just, again, it's another passion that I've always been lucky to find work related to it. And like the two go hand in hand. But again, yeah, administratively, like the things that we were doing when I was working at Globe and in the surf industry and trying to work through, you know, 5, 6, 8, 9, 10 people, getting them from all over the world to be in one place at one time to get waves and get this swell and be able to like film and shoot a video project or a photo shoot or whatever it was. Like, you learn how to book travel and you learn how to work through the logistics because you have to. Like you said, it was like, I didn't know, like, yeah, I knew how to book my travel or like me and a friend or whatever we were doing or going on a trip or like, you know, that kind of stuff. But you learn through trial and error. And like, I think that I personally am one of those people that like, you get thrown in the deep end, you kind of just figure it out
and learn how to swim.
Yeah. And it's the same thing with music, you know? So,
do you feel like because of that, like it's actually kind of easy with Chris? Cause you just got one guy to look. I mean,
I mean, there's so many different complications and things that come into that. Cause there's just like, you know, at a show day or what's going on, there's so many things happening in that time frame. But as far as logistics and travel, and like, because Chris and I have been working together for 5 years now, and like, he's very particular about his travel because he did it all himself for so long. And to the same point as like what we're discussing, he did it himself, but he was going to like, cool, I've been to Austin, Texas X number of times, and I know the routing that I should be able to get there from LA from this, or like, why are we staying here? Things like that that you learn over the years were things that I had to learn and educate myself on, and his preferences and things and how he wants to travel. And it was great. But like, because of my background and again, administrative logistics and things like that for travel, I was like, oh, I totally get it. Like everyone has their preferences in the way they do it. And then there's always the like points game too, you know, years ago, it's like, oh, can we get upgrades using points here? Can we fly this airline? Can we get status? All that's just like,
there's it's so a many game. Things that people don't know about, but we're going to now catch back up to it. We kind of gave people like a bit of a brief throw around a couple things that you do, but I want to, like I do with all of my podcasts, kind of go through chronologically. I love getting to know how you found yourself in the position you are today and the kind of things that have got you there as well, because we've only known each other since what you would have been probably 20 when I met you.
Yeah.
I don't know anything 21. Before that. So let's go back to the start. But first I love to ask this question to everyone, and that's, what are you grateful for in life right now?
I'm super grateful for a lot of things, but I think, you know, in particular, I'm super grateful for the people that I've been lucky to be around and the opportunities that that's given me in life. I think that's probably the biggest thing. Like, again, talking about work and all those things, but it's really just been that I'm grateful to be lucky enough to be around these people that go in these different paths and these creative outlets and things that allows me to be a part of those different worlds. And that's what I'm super grateful, you know, sitting here in Australia, having a couple of days off, like getting paid to be here and be a part of this is just something that like I never thought would happen. And that goes back to a lot of the other things and the different stuff I'm doing. But again, it has to do with the people that I'm around and them seeing me as somebody they want to actually give these opportunities to. So that's what I'm definitely super grateful for.
Yeah, I love that. So let's work out how you got there. Let's rewind back to the start. It's great. We had we went and had a coffee and went to Riggs Recovery. Shout out Riggs. We had an ice bath and cryo this morning. And one of the things you told me this morning when we're having a coffee, because we're a little French patisserie, is that the first language you learned how to speak was Spanish. So let's make that the start point. Rewind me back to the start. What was life like as a kid up until you were 10 years old?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Orange County. I grew up in a small little town called Surfside. That's like this small little beach town in
California, USA.
Southern California. It was a really good opportunity to grow. I was, again, very lucky and fortunate. And my parents were both working full time and they were just like very headstrong in what they were doing. My dad was starting his business. My mom was getting into IT. And like, as the internet was kind of like really popping off, she was learning how to build web pages and do all this stuff. Sweet. So she was working full time. And so I had a live-in babysitter that stayed with us a few days a week when my parents were at work. And they consciously wanted me to learn Spanish because Spanish was becoming more and more of like a main language in Southern California, you know, California in general, lots of places in the US, but Mexico, specifically right there. Mexico is the borders there, and you can drive across the border from our house in like 3 hours, basically. So she didn't speak any English. My mom speaks decent enough Spanish, was actually studying Spanish at the same time as she was working in like IT and stuff. Dad kind of unfortunately had to just figure it out a bit. But what I heard primarily between my mom and then the live-in babysitter was Spanish. That was the first language that I kind of picked up for a few years until I was about 5-ish, and then became best friends with the kid who lived across the street from me, and he didn't speak any Spanish. And I like had to like figure it out and was kind of like devo that I couldn't like have a real conversation with him. And that's when they said I kind of just started like switching over to English. Like I knew English, but I just didn't really speak it that much because I didn't hear it. Just as like anyone else who's born in a different country or in a home that speaks a different language, you speak that when you're at home. So my dad was kind of the odd man out when it came to the language barrier, and then he kind of learned enough to get through it. And then I went the other way after a couple of years. So grew up doing that, and then still speak it a bit, but definitely not to the extent I used to. I wish I held on to it, but I just don't have those same kind of situations. But if we're traveling, if we're doing shows in South America or somewhere with like Spanish speaking countries, I start to pick it up a bit more in doing that. I just I wish I spoke it more at home and got to speak to people about it. When I was younger and working in restaurants and stuff, I would actually speak it more frequently just because a lot of the staff was from Mexico or Spanish speakers. And so I'd get the opportunity to speak it and they'd find out I speak Spanish and they were like, we're not speaking English to you anymore. Like, this is, speaking Spanish and you got to figure it out. And I was like, all right. But it was a great challenge and something that I'm fortunate for, again, like just being super lucky to do that stuff. But
I love that. I love when I like talk to someone who's a good friend of mine. Like when you told me that this morning, I'm like, I love when you find out something that you just would not expect. I was like, wow, that's so cool.
We just haven't been in a situation where it's been necessary, right? What? Like if we were like in a trip to Mexico, correct, then you'd be like, wait, you speak Spanish? Yeah, but it just like naturally came up as we were speaking about languages at the cafe. So
Tell me about schooling. Let's go up to high school.
Okay.
Let's talk about your high school sort of life. When you what was high school like for you? Did you have a bunch of friends? Were you super sporty? What did what was high school like for you? Academic? Only child.
Yeah, I was only child, so no siblings, but my parents always had like a very open door policy for friends, like people. And like, and I think everyone who's stayed with us over the years and stuff has seen that. And you know, both my mom and dad both have siblings and I wasn't. And I think that they were very conscious of that. So I always wanted to have that open door policy. But I went to Los Alamitos High School at first and then switched to Huntington. So I transferred from between my sophomore and junior year, which would be between year 10 and 11. Okay, so to finish my last 2 years of high school, and it was back to surfing. I was spending more time with people surfing. I was traveling with them. I was doing some of the pro juniors and just like, you know, whatever I could kind of do at the time and learning. And I just loved the sport and the industry. And so the people I was spending time with mainly all went to Huntington Beach High School instead of Los Alamitos. And so I wanted to transfer. My parents weren't really on board with the idea. They felt that Los Alamitos was a better school on paper. A lot of the kids there go to like Ivy League colleges and things like that. So that was why they wanted me there. But I was pretty headstrong and like, I'm going to go to Huntington. And my parents were like, sweet, then you need to do all the paperwork. You need to do everything. Wow. We'll sign off on it. Yes. But so I transferred schools. Surfing was just always kind of a major focus. Not as much like traditional sports. I did track and field for a while just because, it was a passion. And then it's as you get higher into those, especially the schools that really push out Ivy League like athletes and stuff, I just realized like, hey, like I'm a good runner, but I'm nowhere as good as like these people that are going to go on to have professional sports and that. And I transferred to Huntington and just pursued surfing, went snowboarding a lot when I could drive. Like we had a little place up in Big Bear that like me and my friends would drive up to at least twice a week if we could. Like we were up there quite a bit. And it was a lot of freedom, you know, when you're 17, 18 years old and it's like, sweet, we can
find Big Bear like 2 hours.
Yeah. Big Bear is like, it's San Bernardino National Forest. So it's like, it's about 2 hours, give or take, traffic.
Wow.
And so we would do like, on a Friday night, we'd all hang out and they'd be like, cool, traffic's done. Get in the car at 8 p.m., drive up there and spend the night or two and then come back and be back home. And like, so did that, did skateboarding. But as I got older, got hurt a lot. Skating is like, again, same thing. Would be around people like that were going into this level of like being professional athletes. And I was like, if I try and keep up, I end up getting hurt doing that in particular. So I was like, I need to just pull back on that a bit. Did Huntington Beach High School, graduated in 2008.
What did you think when you were getting towards the end of high school, the future was going to look like? Obviously America's a lot different. College is like almost 90% of people basically are going to end up in college. Australia's a bit different with university. I feel like it'd be like maybe 40-50%. So it's a lot different. It's almost like you're guaranteed to go to college. So am I right?
Did
you?
I went to college, but it was a bit forced, I guess you could say. Like you're saying, like it was a thing that needed to be done. And my mom is a person who loves higher education. She finds a passion that she loves and she'll like go back to school for it. So Spanish or, hey, the internet's blooming, I need to go learn more about this. Like she'll go and do that. And often it's not even a profession thing. It's just something that she's passionate about and she loves it. And so it was, you know, something that she pushed very hard. My dad, on the other hand, dropped out of high school at 16, started working full time, like for himself, like, well, not at first, but built a company up, did all these things.
What industry does your dad work, like business?
He did trucking, distribution, and warehousing. Yeah. So he had like, you know, a big warehouse full of things and then would handle all the logistics and distribution, getting things from A to B, and started that with a business partner, went bankrupt in his first business and then started another one. And then the second one ended up being pretty successful. And he sold that down the line as I got older. It was kind of like contradicting because I didn't want to go. I was like, hey, like, I don't have a passion for this. Like, this isn't where my head's at. This isn't where I enjoy. But my mom was very headstrong and like, hey, this is like one of those boxes you have to check to get to where you need to go. And I'm thankful that she did. But again, from there, I went to Long Beach State, which was like from where my parents lived, a 10-minute drive. And they also were like, I was doing whatever I could. I was working at a restaurant. I was working at a surf shop. I was kind of doing whatever, like getting tiny little sponsorship deals here and there that would get me to like, oh, cool, we could go on this trip for here's a couple $100 to go on that thing and that, and doing whatever I could to kind of keep that going and make ends meet. And they were like, hey, like, sweet. Hey, you can move out. We're not covering that cost. Because for a lot of kids, they go to university, they go to college, and they have to move out of state. And parents have to cover the cost because kids just don't have the income stream.
Yeah.
My parents are like, you're going to school 10 minutes down the road. There's no reason that you need to live out of home unless you want to. And if you want to, more power to you, but you need to pay for it. So I was like, okay, like that makes sense. So I stayed at home for quite a while.
You lived on the beach.
Yeah, it was really difficult to say no to, like not paying rent or any of that.
Parents are great, yeah.
Yeah, my parents are amazing and so welcoming. And like, I think that's kind of that same time frame that I met you and
a lot of my other friends stayed at mine. It's like, yeah. I feel so privileged, and it's, I'm sure you do too, that people obviously don't have that opportunity in that loving family, a lot of people. But if you do, like, power to you. I was there till I was 25.
I think I was 26 by the time I finally moved out. But it was like, it's like, it's a weird thing because some people look at it negatively. You know, when you're that age, you're kind of like, oh, should I have my own place? You like you're dating family. And you don't want someone to think poorly of you because you live at home. But then at the same time, it's like, I think one of the things that I learned actually was as I went into my career, and funny enough, Dion actually told me when I worked at Globe, he was like, hey, like, and we were just having a chat like over beers when we were somewhere at a trip. And he was like, oh, like, so things are going well. And I'm like, yeah, I got a raise recently. He's like, told me this thing that he did. And I started doing it, which was that I automatically took a withdrawal from my like checking account into a savings account. And he was like, hey, like, if you can live off the money you're making right now, when you get a new pay increase or something like that, you should still be able to, at least for a period of time, live off that same money. So put it into a savings account as much as you can. And he's like, if not, I've seen that you're kind of like I am, where you want to buy drinks for friends, you want to take care of people, you'll start spending more because you have more and you do it. And I was like, it really kind of sat with me and I was like, wow. And so I went home and did that. And at the time it was like, you know, whatever, cool. I can put a few bucks into this. And then as I got up in my career a little bit, I kept trying to grow that, even to like
leave it the same.
Recently, right. I even like just kept like definitely not living it the same. Like at some point, you have to spend more, you live more, you need more space, you just things grow, but still trying to always like put money aside to be like, hey, down the road, I'm going to need this. And when I was living at home, I didn't have a lot of expenses. Like my phone bill was covered by work, all these things kind of came together. I was like, I was trying to put as much away as I could, knowing that down the road, I was going to like hopefully be able to buy a home. And that currently in Southern California is a crazy venture to try and do if you want to be anywhere near a coastline. It's it's nuts. So, but yeah, so yeah.
That's a great lesson to learn from Dion. So you go to college.
So I went to college
and then
I majored in marketing, communications with a minor in marketing, actually. I went into it with business, but it was very heavy like math for business to get that degree. And it just didn't quite work. I was like, this is not where I want to go. Communications was pretty open-ended. And I always knew marketing was kind of a thing. And that was about the time, you know, I just realized like, hey, like I love the surf industry. I want to work in the surf industry. I love the lifestyle that a lot of my close friends are living, but I know that I'm not the athlete that could be able to do that. So how can I get there? And that was kind of when I started putting feelers out about like, hey, is there any like marketing roles? Is there anything I can do? Like just low level. And that's kind of funny enough. I took a course and one of my classes was like part of the, was to write like a, I think you guys call it like a, no, like it's a resume for us, but like a CV, right? Yeah, is that what you guys call it? Yeah. So basically writing that and like they were like, yeah. And then you had to apply to a job. Like you didn't have to, it was just like, hey, write it and apply and see what happens. At the time, one of the jobs that was open was the surf marketing manager at Globe. And then when I was young, I had like a flow thing and like Globe helped me out a lot and like did stuff over the years and knew some of the crew there. And when I applied, I actually got an interview and I sat down for the interview when it was like, it would have been my like senior year of college, of university. It was like my fourth year. And when did the first interview, got on really well with the girl that was running the marketing director at the time. And she asked me to come back the next day. And then the next day I met with Joe G, who makes a lot of the Globe Surf films, who's made, you know, tons of iconic films over the years. And we just got on amazing, like my background and like just knowing people and things, like just things and like the questions he was asking me, like we're just so natural. And we ended up sitting in this room for like 4 hours. He was leaving for Iceland the next day to film Strange Rumbling in Shangri-La. And he was like, man, I really wish you were already up and running. I'd love to have you on the trip with us. I feel like it'd just be so helpful for everything. And that then turned into a full-time role while I hadn't quite finished university yet. Like, wow. I was still in college.
Did you go on that trip the next day?
I didn't go on the Iceland trip, but I got, the next one, you're on. Yeah, I got brought in, and my first day, Thrasher was there to meet with the skate guys, and they were like, hey, do you want to come to the Laker game? We got a box. So I went to the box with Thrasher guys. I was told to book a flight to Hawaii for Surfer Pole Awards because they had been nominated for the film the year before, and they didn't know if they were going to win, but they're like, hey, you should come out for this and like be part of the team for Globe, and people can start to connect the dots and be like, oh, you're not just,
you can meet the surfers that you're going to be managing.
Yeah, like, yeah, like a few people that I didn't quite know or people that I'd met, and then again, just for the industry and all the people that I had met being like, oh, you're now at Globe,
yeah,
like,
you're
here's
now
like, yeah,
Globe,
like,
and it's like just like surfing and
yeah,
right,
yeah,
you
just
roll this.
Exactly. So that was like my first day, is like booking a flight to Hawaii and then going to the lake, well, not all of it, but you know. And I was like, wow, this job doesn't seem so shit. Like, this is pretty cool. Like, this is great. And then turns out, you know, we ended up doing so much amazing stuff there. And I learned so much from the Hills and in particular Joji when I was there, and like got to do a ton at Globe. It's just like originally as the marketing, surf marketing person, to kind of just be there administratively and help with everything. And then that over the years kind of grew and grew. So like I was still trying to finish school, but they didn't have online schooling at the time. And so we started making a surf film. We're making short films. I've got trade shows. I've got sales meetings, all the travel things that come along with it, especially at that stage of where the surf industry was. And it was so difficult, but I wouldn't take it back for the world. Like, I learned so much, you know. Joe became like a mentor in a lot of ways to the industry and everything. I got to like, but we did the first trip I went on outside of the Hawaii thing was we went to Brazil. And we filmed for the Strange Drumlings in Shangri-La, and it was like CJ and Damian Hobgood, it was Brendan Gibbons, it was just such like a cool roster of people, and Joe had tried to cultivate this like thing within Globe that was like, it's a staple company, especially in Australia and the US. It has its up and downs when it's been like super popular or it's been like a little bit smaller, and he's always looked to the surf industry and a surf company as a way to keep things really relatable and cool and core for that brand.
Yeah.
And so I was fortunate enough to be part of all that stuff at that stage. And that was like, yeah, about 4 years I was there with them doing that.
Wow. Yeah, that's when I met you.
Yep.
You used to fling me some shoes.
Keep everyone laced up. That was part of it. I was running the surf team, and it was kind of administratively at first. And then as it grew, it was like, hey, like, take it on here. Hey, now take on like the whole Global team and like really help oversee like all the athletes and negotiating the contracts and doing that stuff. As well as like, it got to the point where it was anything surf encompassing. So whether we were making a film, rolling it out, a new collection, a collection with Dion or any of the other athletes, a new shoe, anything that was surf related basically came through me to like help logistically get it together, come up with marketing plans, how to roll it out. And that kind of opened the door to Surfline. Like, Surfline had been a part of my life since I was very young, but we did a rollout for one of Dion's collections. And I worked diligently to put together like this rollout plan that kind of took over all of the major surf media sites at the same time. And no one had quite done that in that scope, like all like click throughs and all this, but then having editorial that backed it. So it wasn't just like, hey, here's a new collection. And it was like, hey, there's editorial stories that related hopefully to, at the time, the Stab audience that was a little bit younger and more like Australian driven. And then you had the Surfline audience that was very broad, but can be a bit older and a little bit more like traditional. And then we had Surfer Mag and Surfing, and like there was all these different outlets. And then the crew at Surfline reached out and were just like, hey, we'd love to sit down and chat about this role we have at the company based off of specifically that. They're like, hey, we saw how this one went for you and how it went for the company. And that kind of opened the door into the next stage, which was Surfline.
How was that, leaving a great job with Globe?
It was so
tough.
Back
there.
Yeah, I did end up going back. So,
went through that decision.
Yeah, it was really tough. Again, like, it was my first opportunity in the industry to really kind of build a name for myself outside of just myself, right? Like, it was to be a part of something and like show that can build something and have understanding of marketing and how to launch things and how to like make things hopefully successful. And at Globe, we did Strange Unleaks was probably one of the largest things we did. And it was a 3-year project of working on this surf film and then releasing it. And we put together a movie premiere during the US Open and took over airplane hangars and like all this crazy stuff. We had the cops trying to shut us down. We had TSA. We had all these things, right? And it was so fun. And learning a lot of that still goes back to what I do now, as you were saying earlier. It's this logistics. So, when the opportunity came up from Surfline, like I didn't take it, you know, at first it was like, oh, this is really great. And it's an honor to have somebody like that looking in. Sean Collins, who started Surfline, was my parents' neighbor. AJ, his youngest son, was one of my very closest best friends for years growing up. We went to school together. We did surf trips together. We did all these things. So when the opportunity came up, it was like, oh, this kind of comes full circle in a weird way. And it wasn't something I applied for, right? It was something they came out to me and were like, hey, we'd love to chat about this opportunity. But when the time came and I had to sit down and like ask Matt Hill and Gary Valentine and Joe, like Joe knew about it as I was going through some of the discussions. But when I finally was like, hey, I'm going to do this, I went and sat down with Gary Valentine, the president of all of Globe and everything that they do, and Matt Hill, one of the Hill brothers, the founding brothers. And I was like, hey, guys, like, hey, I have this opportunity. And they were super understanding, which was super cool. Like they really understood like, hey, this is a growth set for you that we can't quite give you right now in your career based on where we are as a company, who we have in positions and what's going on. And so it was awesome, but it was definitely not something I took lightly. And like the fact that they gave me so much opportunity and to be able to cut my teeth and like get thrown into the deep end, as you said, and just kind of sink or swim and get my head above water and learn so much. So like I definitely took that with me as I went to Surfline.
Mm. Tell me about Surfline. What was like biggest project that you worked on? Something that pops into mind, something that you're proud of that you did with Surfline.
A few things there. So when I went to Surfline, at the time, again, I think that a lot of their content and stuff was very
all about
forecasting and news driven and like things of that nature. It wasn't as much like creative things. And you know, Stab had some really amazing creative content that they were doing, and I think that they saw that competition and were like, hey, we have a giant audience, we should be doing more of these things also. And that was part of why I got brought in, was to produce these roles and really sit between the brands and trying to find ways to justify for a Volcom or a Michelob Ultra or Corona or whoever it may be that they should be spending the money with Surfline to do something creatively, and that we'd be able to like work with their athletes and middleman that and get like, you know, some brands have great relationships with their athletes, other ones don't, you know. Some people just send a paycheck and can't really ask much of them. And so the hope was that, and so some of the bigger projects we did were we did this really cool one that came together naturally called Shadow Company, which was some of the more big wave surfers like the Billy Kempers and people of that world and Nathan Florence and even Koa Smith and that. And like they were then, you know, I think Billy had just right around that time won his first like big wave world championship and things of that nature. But they wanted to figure out a way to like, they wanted to hunt slabs. Like, we want to paddle slabs that are 10-foot, like scary. Most everyone else looks at it and goes, I want nothing to do with that. They're like, it's not a big wave thing. It's like, I want to get crazy, crazy barreled on a wave that just looks like scary. Silly. Yeah. And we did the first trip with them and it went over really well. And then we kind of like, this name got thrown around as Shadow Company, just because they're always kind of in the shadows lurking and like looking at swells. And then on like a moment's notice, they'll fly around the world to go find this one wave, and they're talking to people all over. And we put that together, and that actually, like, I think it was one of the few times that Surfline had been nominated for a Surfer Magazine, like, Surfer Pole Award. Wow. It didn't end up winning, but it was, like, short series of the year or whatever that was nominated for. So it was cool to be a part of that, like, just something that kind of, like, contradicted a little bit what we were doing. Mm. But it also leans into the forecasting thing, you know? It's like, oh, we're helping forecast these crazy swells in places all over the world. So we did that one. We did a really fun project that we called Road to Salvation, and it was for Michelob Ultra. Michelob was trying to like kind of get more involved in Southern California culture, surfing, skateboarding, music, things of that nature. So the original plan was funny. It was going to be Cutsnake and GTA, and then a bunch of surfers and skaters, and we were going to have RVs that went like up the East Coast. So we're going to drive across and hit a wave pool in the middle and then come to the West Coast. And like basically they would do shows within like 10 miles reach of the coastline, and then we'd go like set up like pop-up skate sessions, and the guys would skate, and we'd go to like skate parks and surf and all this. Some of the timing and pieces just didn't quite lay out the way that like we had originally planned, so we restructured a little bit, and we did this road trip from basically like LA all the way up to San Francisco in an RV. And we threw in a bunch of friends. It was like Andrew Jacobson, Cam Richards, Noah Schweizer, like, and then we put in like Curran Caples and Jake Anderson and like some of the skate crew. And then we kind of scheduled it out so we could hit a couple music festivals at the same time where Michelob was sponsoring some of that stuff. So we just did this whole video thing and it was just super fun. And it got tons of traction and we ended up scoring waves in Southern California as well, like, which was
rare.
It can be very rare, you know, like to the point where we like took this RV and I mean, it was unfortunate. I also got to work a part of Surfline, which was I got to work with some of my best friends, with Billy and Travis Coleman and Billy Watts, and like work on that stuff. And like me and Billy had to jump on another trip at the back end of that one. And I left Travis the keys and I was like, hey, you got to return the RV and turn it back in and just say you're me, because you got to return it under my name. I'm the one that rented it. And after like, you know, I think anyone that spent 10 days plus in an RV with a bunch of guys just knows how total the thing gets. It was like terrible. And the way they got out of it was there was a wave storm like soft top underneath still, like somebody had bought one at Costco somewhere on the road and just like it was still there. And so when he went to turn it in, the guy's like, oh, this thing's falling off the hinges, the bed's broken over here, this is broken, like all this stuff. And he was like, what's going on with that surfboard? And Travis was like, oh, you want it? And the guy's like, yep, sweet, doesn't look like the damages are here, and just handed it over and we walked out like the door. But yeah, it was like $100 wave storm for probably $1,000 in damages at the RV rental place. But yeah, that one just kind of sits with me as like a fun one that was just like, we really enjoyed that trip together. It was like, it was just a lot of friends that got to do something really cool. And sometimes when you have that come together, the synergy just creates this kind of like thing you want to look at and view. And yeah, we kind of worked with some venues and things around that time. There wasn't much marketing budget to market in real life a lot of these projects. And so we worked with like the Bungalow in Huntington as they were opening and putting on like screenings and premieres and doing that stuff. And there was no money for it, but we kind of just back channeled it through and like made it work. And so we got to like put together a tour after the tour where we did like multiple locations of putting on premieres. And it was just more of an excuse for all the boys to get back together and have a couple beers. And like Michelob was like, sweet, you want to do it there? We got Michelob's there. Like, that's perfect. We'll throw a couple bucks at that too. And it was like just a fun one. But I mean, those two definitely stuck with me, but we did so much stuff. We were doing, again, like projects on top of projects to try and fulfill for all these different brands and different things we were doing at the time. So,
I love your story that like the way that you identified, you know what, I'm probably not going to quite get to the level in surfing that a lot of my best friends are that I'm trying to chase to, but how can I still make myself relevant and get to, at the end of the day, you probably lived a far more like exciting surf career than majority of surfers, especially ones maybe who were in your sort of pack on the junior series. And you kind of went, okay, marketing, use the network that I've built, work for one of the brands, and then I get to go on the surf trips anyway.
Like, I think, by design,
is I feel like I'm like building my life right now with what I do with the Good Human Factory, like that, like all my ambassadors of my mates who are pro athletes. So I go hang out with them and it's work. It's like,
it's great. Yeah. Like I was so super lucky. And you know, even in that time frame, like there was a stage where, like to say Jack Freestone and Mitch Cruz, who are very close friends of mine that I met years and years ago when they first came to the States, and then they'd stay with me and just whatever, you know, they had their management team here and they were like living in the States so much and having to do these meetings. They asked me to become basically a co-agent of like their company that was like their agency that like was taking care of all this stuff.
My agency. Many deals.
Yeah.
I didn't win any comps.
So, but it was just, again, it was like another fortunate thing that like, kind of were just hey, like I'm sitting in all these meetings and unfortunately like everyone's in Australia. It'd be a last minute thing. And be like on a Monday, like, hey, we want you to come down here and sit and chat about this thing. And they're like, well, I don't want to negotiate these things. I don't want to be the bad person. I don't want to be the person saying yes or no to these things. Like, and they kind of brought up the idea of having me step in and help a little bit. And it was really fun to like have a crack at that too. You know, it was like a 2-year span where I got to like be an agent and negotiate deals and talk on their behalf and try and find them new opportunities and do things like that. And it was just cool to be able to like help friends. You know, it wasn't something that I went into like, oh, I have to be the biggest agent or any, I didn't have these aspirations for it. It was just like a, hey, if I can help my friends and I'm going to make a couple bucks at the same time, this is a win-win. Yeah. Like, this is great.
And that was at the same time as Surfline?
That was overlapping with Surfline, and then a little bit when I went back, like, there was definitely a couple, like, as I went back to Globe after Surfline, there was a bit of some, like, conversations around, like, is there going to be conflicts here? Like, I was also helping Eric Geiselman with his stuff, and he had just signed a deal with Globe, and, like, it was kind of, like, a little bit, like, hey, like, they can't be biased, like, nature to these things, and I was, like, of course, and that kind of fizzled out, not fizzled out, but just kind of like those guys, everyone kind of took different paths and did different things. And it just naturally was at a place where like, okay, the agent side of it is something I enjoy, but I also am not cutthroat enough. I don't think like, I'm not a person that's going to try and like take every penny from you just because it's like, sometimes you got to be that person. You got to take brands and put them against each other and do these things that I just like, for me, I didn't quite feel that was the right thing for me. I was like, I want to help my friends, but not at like
the expense
of what I've built for myself or my relationships with these marketing directors and people that I'm also working with, you know, like, again, if I was at Surfline and say Billabong's like, sweet, we're gonna do this massive project with you, and then 2 weeks later I'm sitting there with somebody else and like going, oh no, you can't pay him that, you're gonna pay him this much, and like creating this animosity over like dollars and cents, I just felt like it was something that was, it was really hard to juggle that one. But again, I was lucky to do it and to experience it and do it, like,
say yes and make it work.
Make it work. Yeah, I guess the kind of, you could say, one of the stories of my life is just get thrown in and figure it out.
So, and just do it with confidence. So how do you feel quite, let's go back to Globe real quickly. Yeah. And then, cause I don't want to work out how you went from Globe out of the surf industry to June Shine and tour managing Chris Late, because I just want to try and get into your mind a little bit on if there is this fear of failure, if this lack of confidence doing something new, or if it's a front of confidence. Oh yeah. Talk me a bit through your mindset when you do get thrown into this deep end. Do you have confidence in yourself, or do you have some doubts? Because obviously
the Good Human Factory is a bit of a mental health thing. I feel like you are this healthy, happy guy that's got so many things going on for him, but I'm sure there's been moments where you doubt yourself trying something new.
I absolutely, on a regular basis, have doubts about myself and anxiety about things that are going on, and even doing changes like within going to a new job, or like, is that the right move for me? Is that the right thing? Like, so yeah, I did Surfline for a few years. They kind of switched back to a different direction, and they were like, hey, doing these creative projects costs a lot of money, and we've got a lot of personnel here and things that were going into it. And it was, they were having the biggest sponsorship years they've ever had. But at the same time, they were like, we have this huge network of subscribers that creates a ton of revenue and takes very little, like all we got to do is keep camera networks, continue to get better, forecasting to get better. And like, we can do that. So at that time we parted ways, and Joe and Gary Valentine offered me the job to come back as the North American marketing director at Globe. And so I went back to that. And I was like, oh, I just went from, you know, like this low level marketing person at the, like handling this little thing, kind of growing up, doing some stuff and like getting better at what I was doing and learning a lot. And then got to go to Surfline, be the executive producer of content over there, and like had this step up. And then the fact that they gave me this opportunity to come over and step into this role. And I was like, wow, this is pretty nuts. And so I did that. And then not long after I was there, probably about a year after I was there, a guy named Frank and a guy named Kevin Sanderson, who both worked at Rockstar Energy. And so over the years, we'd done stuff with Rockstar as sponsors on like video projects, because athletes from Globe were overlapping or these things. And we worked on things together and they'd seen how it worked. And so my name came up to basically come work at a brand called Health Aid, which was a non-alcoholic kombucha company. And they'd been on the rise and they'd been taking off. And so Frank had reached out and was like, hey, I'd love to chat. Like, we were looking to like build some more of our team here, and kind of they'd built this huge thing within yoga and health and lifestyle and female specifically. They had a huge audience for it. That was most of their customers. That was most of what they were trying to do. And Frank's goal was to try and branch out a little bit more, to try and get more of a male demographic, using action sports as one of those areas. It's like, there's overlap between people doing that. For me, I was super unsure. I was like freaking out. Like, I don't know if I can do this. I've never worked in beverage. I don't know anything about it. Like, I didn't know anything. I was like, I don't even drink kombucha. Like, I was like, I don't know anything about it. He's like, let me send you a case. Just see how it does in the office and see the response to it. And I was like, all right, cool. And the case showed up at the office. I tried it and I was like, this doesn't taste bad. It's kombucha. It has that flavor to it. But I watched in the office how people responded to it. Like, there was women in the office that would see it and be like, oh, where'd this come from? And like, they were so excited about it. And I was like,
in the Globe office.
Yeah. And I was like, oh shoot, that's something that like people are actually like paying attention to this and they care about it. And like, there is an appetite for it. So we chatted more and I kind of wasn't sure. I was like, we're kind of just getting our feet under us at Globe again and like going in this new direction, and we're kind of getting some traction again. And he was just like kind of pretty persistent. And I was just like, at some point I was like, I can't say no to that offer. I have to give this a try. But to your point, I was, I was shitting myself. I was like, I don't know if this is the right move for me. I don't know what I'm doing. I could absolutely just tank this thing and be terrible at it. And went over there and we had some great success. The company continued to flourish and take off. I was definitely probably the odd man out at that company compared to Globe. Like, again, it was very like health and wellness focus. And as healthy as I am, I'm still not a person that's like, I'm not practicing yoga three times a day. Mm-hmm. It was just a different piece for me that didn't quite fit, but I had a lot of fun trying to learn the dynamics and like office culture and how to fit into that culture and like be able to have a conversation with someone who's going, hey, like we're already having all this success here. I'm like, yeah, but that's max. Like you've already maxed out that audience and that culture and that piece. You need to continue to grow that. Mm. And so we did. And we had, again, it had some great, great success. And in a few years there, Coca-Cola ended up purchasing it. And so like, as they purchased it, part of the discussion was just that like, hey, we have our internal teams. We don't need this like massive, like basically we maxed out our facilities. We had oversold the amount of product that we could possibly deliver from the factory that we had internally. And they needed to raise funds to be able to make a new factory to build because they couldn't actually like make deliver enough product.
Wow.
And so at that time, like why you don't, and like, it was like a handshake, like, hey, like marketing was awesome. You guys crushed it so well. Like, but we don't need it anymore until we get a new factory because we can't really substantiate any more growth. Like we need more factory space before we can do anything. So yeah, I got let go there, like out of like on a Monday, like everything's crushing, it's going. And then it's like, oh, actually we're going to have redundant to part ways. Or... yeah. Not even redundant. Yeah. It was just that like they got rid of everyone on senior marketing like that. Yeah. They're like Coca-Cola, they're doing this deal. And I get it. Like you're paying people well with bonuses and all these different things. And it was like, well, we can't have you actually market. Like, we don't want to give you money because we don't want to spend anymore because we don't want any new customers right now because we can't actually give them new product. So it was like a weird, you know, double-edged sword.
So you got let go. How's that part of your life?
Very, very questioning scary? Everything. Yeah. So scared. I was like sitting around, like not knowing what I was going to do.
5-6 years ago, huh?
Yeah. Coming up. Exactly.
So when you were doing Health Aid, was it just Health Aid?
It was just Health Aid. I was in the office 9 to 5. It was like the first time like
we're starting to probably making better money than you've ever made, but we kind of like I'm not traveling.
It was like you're in the office. Like I live in Manhattan Beach, and I would drive to Redondo, which is, you know, 15-minute drive, 20-minute drive. So it wasn't a long drive to the office, but I was in the office every day above the factory in a cubicle, like just, you know, more traditional, like doing really cool things, like putting together projects and things that were still really cool and passionate, but it wasn't like I wasn't out in the field doing things. Where Globe was a bit of a balance of that. It was like, hey, like as I became the marketing director and went back, it was more office time, but still a bit of a balancing act for both of them. And to be honest, it kind of ate my soul a little bit. I was like, I'm not the person that like, I totally understand needing to have office time. I understand having those conversations and the interactions in the office that are a lot of times flourish into big things. But sitting there 9 to 5 and being that required piece, like it felt like I was not using myself to full potential. And you just meet so many people as you're out and about doing things that go so far. This
networking. Exactly.
And I've been lucky to be able to do those things again. And I got let go.
You had a bit of money saved.
I had a bit of money. They did a good severance package because again, it wasn't like work related. It wasn't like any of us were like not doing our jobs. Yeah, it was just like, hey, unfortunately, this is what we're doing. Had that, and I was just kind of at a loss. I wasn't sure. The surf industry had been going through some really weird times, and I was like, I don't know if I want to go back to that space. Like, it just doesn't feel right. And the only two brands that kind of stuck out to me that seemed like places I would maybe want to go based on like work culture and what the brands were on their way to doing was Red Bull and Vans. And so I reached out to the contacts that I had at those companies, ended up going through the process. Red Bull has a very lengthy interview process, like crazy lengthy. So started that process with them. Vans, the only things they really had available at the time didn't quite fit. And I went and met with them, sat down in the office, talked to some of the, like their leadership team and stuff. And they were like, hey, we'd love to keep this conversation going, but right now we just don't have a thing that necessarily fits right. And I was like, fair enough. And funny enough, I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing. Brett Fisher, who's been a friend for years that I met just outside of all of the music and everything outside of my relationship with Fish or anyone else, was I think we had dinner like maybe a week or two after I had gotten let go, just as friends, like just catching up about whatever.
So how'd you meet Brett? Just through
I met Brett originally through Corey Wilson and Miles.
Years
ago at Coachella, we were out at weekend two and he came by the house and we were just all hanging out. I got introduced to him, became friends, and you know, kept in contact, would run into each other wherever, just again, big mutual friend circles. And we just kept in contact. And I think we caught up for dinner or beer or something. And he was like, what are you going to do? And I was like, man, I really don't know what I'm going to do. Like, I'm just kind of like starting this interview process with Red Bull. They've got a couple positions, but I don't know like if that's necessarily where I'm going to fit or what's going to go on. Like the surf industry, again, is just in a weird place. I don't think I want to go back into a brand that's like very, you know, stuck in that way. And funny enough, and then like a few days later, he rang me up and was like, hey, is there any chance you'd want to go on the road with Chris this weekend? And Chris and I had met in passing, again, through Fish or just through Brett or whatever, but never really like had long conversations or, and Chris just had some situation and he basically had like two shows up in Northern California. And Brett was like, hey, would you want to go on the road with him this weekend?
I'm going to set the scene real quick. So Brett Fisher is... he's Fisher and Chris Lake's music manager.
Yeah.
Big time music manager. And
they've asked Brett oversees basically anything day to day, their whole life, like the structure of where their careers go and all the different things that come their way as they've grown into these amazing artists and people and celebrities very much.
So he goes, hey, do you want to go on the road with him?
He was like, hey, do you want to go on the road with Chris this weekend? And I was like, yes, but I don't know anything about music. Like I barely know how to plug in a USB. Like, and I was very upfront. Like at that point I felt confident enough in myself to be like, and my relationship with Brett. And I was like, the last thing I want to do is go on the road with somebody like Chris and fail for him or for Brett or for anyone else. Like, Chris was like still a massive performing artist. He was headlining the show, you know, playing. I remember specifically it was like Walker and Royce and Claptone. And Claptone wears a mask, but like the whole thing. And I was up there trying to like, we got there, whatever. So, but I was like, yeah, I'll go on the road with him. Like, I would love to try it out. And so I went with him and Chris and I got an opportunity to chat and hang out a little bit when we did those shows and just got on really well. Like, it was just like a natural conversation. Like, you know, I don't think he knew what to expect. I didn't know what to expect more than like Brett vouched for me, Fish vouched for me and was like, cool. Yeah, sweet. Go on the road with him.
Because a big deal to a manager. You're like, Chris is basically not PA, but like,
it's a little bit, especially at that time, like the team was much smaller. Like the project was smaller than what it's grown to now and how big it's gotten now. I was like, cool, sweet. And I told Brett, I'm like, hey, and he's like, hey, Chris knows how to make music and play music. He needs some help with some of the logistics stuff to make sure that like he can get from A to B and he doesn't have to stress on it or like deal with, you know, all the different people you often have to deal with to get from A to B, from airport to hotel, hotel to venue, food, like all the things that happen really quickly and all the different stuff. And sometimes those people are really on top of it and really delightful. And sometimes they're not. And sometimes they just are, you know, taking like, you know, might be a young promoter that's having a little bit too much fun at his own party or any number of things that it can be. So we did those two shows. The first one, funny enough, I had told, like, again, I was very upfront about like, hey, I just don't really know what I'm doing here. And he was like, don't worry about it. Just like, just keep your head down. It'll be fine. And I'm like, okay, cool. And sure enough, he was like, hey, here's the USB, go plug it in, play this song on this, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, I'm probably going to mess this up. He's like, you're fine. And I was like, all right. And I walk out there and there's 10,000 people. Claptone's still finishing his set. He's got his mask on. I'm sitting there like trying to like not be seen. There's 10,000 people in the crowd staring at me. I'm absolutely shitting myself, like sweating bullets. And I'm just like fiddling around, like trying to do this thing, not really sure what I'm doing, trying to find this file, like within the USB, this whole thing. And Chris finally comes up and taps me and he's like, I got it. And I was like, oh my God, I just fucked up. Like I knew this was going to happen. Like, what did I do? And he was just like, I was like, I'm so sorry. He's like, man, I mess up all the time and no one even knows it. And he was like, I just kind of wanted to see if you would give it a go. And I was like, I'll give it a go, but I'm going to be upfront with you that I might screw it up also. And I think he took that a little bit like, oh, okay, like you'll man up and give this a shot. Yeah, and I was like, I'll give it a shot. So a few weeks later, Chris texts me and was like, hey, would you want to come on the road? We're going to do a proper tour this weekend. I think it was like four shows in 4 days or something like that. And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And so, yeah, I did that, and that kind of snowballed one thing into the next. And now we're, you know, somewhere over 5 years working together, and it's become, you know, you spend so much time on the road together with something like that. It kind of feels like a partnership in a weird, like different way, you know, like you spend hours on plane flights and car rides and hotel rooms and chatting about things. But back then, yeah, I was booking all the travel, all the cars, like all the hotels, like everything. I kind of just fell into that and was doing all that with Chris and working it out while also applying to these different positions and stuff and trying to figure out, like, you know, long term. I just didn't assume that I didn't think that Chris would want me to be there long term. Kind of, I was like, hey, like, I didn't have the confidence to know that, like, this is something I know nothing about. And there's so many people that would like kill for that position with him or with any of these guys.
Well, that's why I love this, your story, because I'm sure there's so many young kids out there, maybe kind of similar to the surfing with you, who are like, you know what? I'm not that musical. I'm probably not going to be a DJ, but I'd love to be around this scene.
Yeah.
Tour manager is a way to get there, but how do you become a tour manager? It's kind of it's not really apply for a job. You need to have these really unique skills, which are logistics and like networking and like being able to communicate with people effectively. Like,
and I think that the networking thing is the biggest thing. Again, like everything that have kind of fallen into place for me. So whether it was like, you know, the surfing thing, I was kind of conscious of like, I want to work in this industry and do this. But even, you know, after Surfline and going back to Globe, like that was a relationship that I still kind of held on to with some of the people there. And then the health aid thing was fully just based on a relationship with people that I knew that were friends and that respected, you know, the things that I'd worked on or products that I've seen or they've focused or seen those things. And then this one in particular was just truly about like, Brett had been a friend and seen those things and been, you know, from the outside, a part of the surf industry and like things that he noticed and been a part of and seen it. Yeah. Yeah. And so he had that understanding, and it was just, again, the networking thing is more than anything. Like, that's when people ask like, oh, how'd you get into this? And I was like, to be honest, it's something that sort of fell into my lap, but it was because of the relationship I had with these guys. And it wasn't that I went into it thinking that these are long-term relationships I'm trying to build because they're going to like prosper into work. It was just good people being around good people. Yeah. It's good humans hanging out with good humans and like,
and just being kind and like, look, you know, trying your best to help people where you can. And like, that's what you've always been so good. Like, you've come and like, say you and your mom came and stayed at our place for like a couple of weeks. It was nice a couple of years ago. Like, it's just about going out of your way to help people where you can.
Yeah.
And then it comes back around and you're like the you know, obviously working hard and making sure that.
It goes so far. When you have good people around that you can chat with and like you get to know, and then that comes back around full circle. Cause it's just like, if there's an opportunity to help someone, help them.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I've just always tried to do that. Like, if I have even small things, if it's come sleep in my house, sleep on my couch, if it's, hey, need a ride from the airport, whatever it is, it's just like, sweet. If I have got a car and I've got the time, like I'll do it. Yeah. Like whatever.
Exactly.
So that was kind of how it all fell into place. And then that snowballed into 5 years later. And as Chris and I started working together, he didn't really know much of my background. He just, again, was like, oh, Brett says you're a good person for it. I enjoyed having this weekend with you. Like, let's go from there. And then found out a bit more about like what I had done in the background. And again, I think one of the things for me was like not being afraid of taking a step down from hey, I'm the marketing director of this company to being like, oh, I'm a tour manager, which in its own right is still super respectful, but it's like respectable, but it's like, not like the one making all the decisions and things like that of that nature. I was just like, hey, like I don't even deserve this spot. Like, I'm just a person that got an opportunity through friends and I know nothing about music. So the fact that I'm even here, it's still five steps ahead of like anything I ever thought I'd do in music. And then, we've been working together for 5 years and it's awesome. We just get along well. We've got a good structure to how we do things, how we travel together. We're friends, but we don't spend like every waking moment together. You know, some tour managers are somebody's like best friend that just kind of was around and then also fell into it. But we just, we get on well and it works well. And it's such an honor to be a part of like seeing the project go from like even what it was then to like the magnitude of what it is now. And, the partnership between him and Fish and just the AIDA team and what Chris and Brett and Fish and what they've committed to and like financially their time, their heart that goes into like the team they built is crazy. Like it is a little family like on the road, you know,
it's like a big family.
It's pretty big now. I guess it's gotten bigger now, but it used to be.
Just coming on the road, like in Europe this year, being like around like Cody and Cheyenne and like all of the team. There's just so many people who a behind the scenes making like this Fisher and Chris Lake show that need to be like a well-oiled machine, and it is. But the best thing is like everyone has a good time doing it.
Yeah.
I haven't really ever seen any like anger or animosity. If someone stuffs up, it's like, oh no, you're obviously trying your best. If something goes wrong, sweet, we'll adjust.
Yeah.
What's been something that's what's a show that stands out to you? Being obviously someone who
I mean, we just did that Hollywood show and that was
tell me about that.
That was wild. From like a closing, behind the scenes, from a behind the scenes perspective and like the amount of work that went into just getting it to just even happening. Like before it even took place. Like seeing
let's talk
like,
about what it is. For someone who's got no idea what we're talking about, the Hollywood show.
Yeah,
so you guys shut down for the first time ever Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah, it's now whatever, December, but it was like middle of October. Chris and Fish and the whole team and Brad and Cody in particular and Kobe who owns Framework, they worked their ass off to be able to close down like Hollywood Boulevard, which is the most like iconic street in the United States, basically outside of like maybe Times Square, or a few other places. Like it's one of the most, you literally have people like, you know, the most famous movie stars and people stars going down the side, and they were able to close off a city block to be able to put on a show for 12,000 people on a Saturday night in October. And it's like crazy that that happened. And it felt so crazy looking at it because it wasn't like, it was so much fun, but just seeing people going from side to side all the way up into like the storefronts and the stores being closed and like just the amount of steps that went into everything from getting permits done to having to work with the businesses that had to close on a Saturday night for like could be doing a lot of business and like they have to close, and then working with the fire marshals and the police department and all the things that go into that and the amount of money that has to go into that and then hoping to recoup that on sales. And just it just felt like it was one of those ones that everyone, and like you said, in the team, everyone was working overtime to do their part in each of these different areas to make sure this was the show that like mattered. And it was, it, as soon as everyone got there and saw it, I think everyone was just like, holy shit, this is why we've been busting our ass, you know. And it got to that place and it was just like the experience of seeing it was one that was like so massive. Like Coachella and being a part of that one was kind of emotional because it was like, oh wow, this is Coachella, right? It's like that, like you kind of think of Coachella as the top tier. In this past year, Chris and Fish headlined and closed the outdoor stage on Sunday, so they're basically closing that stage down for the whole weekend after 3 days of shows. And, you know, breaking records with the amount of people in the crowd at that specific stage and all these amazing things, I think was pretty emotional for the team. But then the Hollywood one was something that, like, as far as I know, no other artist has ever done, ever, like in the history of Hollywood Boulevard. Like there's closures for, you know, movie premieres and things like that. But like a musical artist doing that was nuts. And to be a part of that and to see it and take it in and just be like, wow, this is absolutely crazy. And the photos, like, again, 12,000 people is a lot of people, but when you look at it in the scope of like a major festival and, you know, Chris and Fish each play these festivals for 40, 50, 60, 80,000 people sometimes. So it's like the size and scope of it, it was just so different to see it in like this one street that was so iconic. And you have so many things going around you in Hollywood. Like there's literally street closures all over the place to be able to close this one block off, right? And it's just like it's not a festival that's been done before. It's not a venue that's been done before. It's not a music, like it just
did it.
It was nuts. It was nuts.
It's so cool. It was so nuts. I'm so bummed I didn't get to get over there, but it was it looked unbelievable. I FaceTimed you. I was with my sister Chloe sitting like right around the about 10 meters away from where we're sitting right now. And we FaceTimed you. I was just like, far out, that looked insane.
It was nuts. And I just figured, like, knowing Fish and everyone, I was like Chloe, I figured like, hey, it'd be great to be able to call you guys and be able to have a moment get to be able to see it from like our perspective and stuff. That was absolutely crazy to be able to be a part of that one and do that. Cause I don't know if it'll ever happen again, in that space like that.
Times Square next.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to be a part of something like that.
I bet
you
probably thought you'd never get Hollywood Boulevard. So
You know, so many things, you know, like it was, steps of over the years, I've been a part of these things and seeing it go. And I think there's often it's like, I can't believe we're doing this. I can't believe that happened. I can't believe, wow, we did that. Like, oh, wow. And not only does it happen, it's like the response from the fans and the crowd is so amazing that that's what builds onto the next one, right? It's like they put the team does a lot, but then what Chris and Fish and like how they have this momentum and feeling and energy during an under construction show, it's like a family reunion, like you were saying. Like for us, it's a family reunion because it's like we don't all get to see each other that frequently. But when you do, that energy, I feel like, just exudes out to everyone. And then they just like, they bust their ass to make sure they're putting on the very best show with the best music that could possibly happen. And like the crowd seems to respond to that. And it's just great. You know, and of course the guys both in their own right are working every day and traveling nonstop and putting on shows and building their audiences and their fan base like across the world on a regular basis. And then when they come back together, it just kind of like the synergy comes in. And it's so wild.
It's so wild. Man, it's been a great chat. I want to talk to you about one last thing real quickly, because not only tour managing, which is a full-time job for most tour managers, you also have a full-time job working for a company, Juneshine. Do you want to tell me a bit about Juneshine and just how you manage to have like you full-time with them and just be able to, how do you like get them to sign off that you can work on the road and travel the world full-time and still get the work done?
So back to the Red Bull thing, I was doing interviews at Red Bull and actually got offered a position, one to move to Miami and like run their athlete program. And the way Red Bull works is like all athletes, right? So whether it's soccer, surfing, anything. And I was like, that doesn't quite fit. I don't really want to move to Miami. Like flew over there, did interviews, actually put a weekend, and then had another, there was another conversation about moving to San Francisco and running like Northern California and then one in Southern California. And at the same time, I was tour managing with Chris. Basically, there was a girl named Gwen and Forrest. Forrest is the co-founder and CMO at Juneshine. And Forrest used to be a filmer for Albie Lehr and Matt Miola, and he's from Maui. And so we'd work together. I used to pay him. Like, I'd be like, hey, like I'd hit up Albie and be like, hey, we need stuff for this XL project at Surfline. And he'd be like, oh, hit up Forrest, talk to Forrest. And so like we had some interactions. Forrest had friends of mine and they were close with friends of his. And Gwen was a friend and she kind of like put her neck out and was like, hey, I think Eric would be great for this position. We chatted through things. The opportunity came up. They kind of had two roles that they were going to combine together to make this larger role. And bottom line was I got brought on, like they were doing really well in San Diego. The company was still young and small. And they were like, hey, we're doing really well in San Diego, but we want to start Orange County in LA. Like, can you help us basically do that?
And
like,
you already knew kombucha, right? From
I knew kombucha. I knew kombucha. But again, oh, sorry, to clarify, Juneshine is hard kombucha. So yeah, like at the time, kombucha. 6% alcohol kombucha, but with all the same benefits, probiotics, tons of flavors, the way it's fermented, still the same processing, basically, that it creates a higher alcohol content. And the idea was great. And it came from an action sports background. So it had this different outlook than a lot of alcohol brands did, all this stuff. But basically at the time I was like, hey guys, like this is a great opportunity. I'd love to work with you guys, but financially this isn't quite enough for me to live off of. Like I would go on from that health aid deal. Like I said, that was 9 to 5 and was making great benefits, money and I had benefits and everything. And they're like, hey, like this, had the Juneshine thing had benefits, but just didn't quite have enough in there to live in LA and be like, hey, I can survive off of this. I was like, but I've got this other thing going with Chris. Are you cool if they go hand in hand? And they were like, bottom line is if the things that we need to get done and like we set out goals and you hit those goals, we don't care what you do. And it's a young company. You know, Forrest is 30 years old. Greg, who's a CEO, is 30 years old. Like it's like they're younger than I am, you know. Sick. So it was like they weren't looking at it in a traditional manner of like somebody who's a bit older that's been like, oh, no, you need to be 9 to 5 in an office and all this stuff. And they never wanted me in the office, really. They saw the benefit in what I could do outside of the office and building. And like if the office is in San Diego and you want me to build a company in Orange County in LA, the last thing I should be doing is sitting in an office in San Diego. And so they were like, again, they're like, here's their budgets. Here's your goals. This is what we need to sell. This is how we need to do things. Have at it. And alcohol and music obviously go hand in hand, venues, festivals, all this stuff. And it's just been this very like, I'm always delicate with both. And I always am weary of like, I don't want to sign on to anything with Chris that I can't do 100%. And I don't want to sign on to things with Juneshine that I can't do 100%. So every time there's like an opportunity to take on a larger role or conversations like that, we have a very open and honest conversation about like, hey, financially, this is where I am. Here's what I'm able to do. Here's what I'm doing here. Like, how does this make sense? And what am I going to have to give to have the hours in the day to do both?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like I could say yes to everything and everyone be like, yeah, sweet. As long as the end goal gets done.
Yeah.
With that said, I probably have an anxiety attack every, I don't know, not a full actual anxiety attack, but I have a bit of like a mental breakdown about just how intense things get every once in a while and think about like, okay, I have to cut back here. I got to do this, or like have these moments. And Zoe, my girlfriend's so great about like, just take a breath. Let's talk through it in 6 hours after you just stop, just turn your laptop off, turn your phone off, hang out for a minute. And then let's have a conversation about how you really feel about it. And like, she'll kind of like step me back. Cause it's just, yeah, all of a sudden it's like, oh, Juneshine needs this. And oh, we're going to be gone for 2 weeks. Like, I don't know how to like, da, da, da. And then like, it just, I just find the time to balance it all. And again, I'm just super lucky to have Chris trusting me and Brett and the whole team, and then Juneshine being like, hey, we've seen the success we've done together. And not only that, they want to continue to grow things and doing more and more. So it works, but I always have to evaluate all of it.
No, I think it's such a great balancing act that you're doing, and it's so cool that you can cross stuff over. I actually got to thank you. You'll remember this, buddy. When I went to Rufus, how we ended up, like, I actually told that Rufus story on my short form podcast, like, mm-hmm. a few weeks back from when this episode comes out. But I told that story, and you were the friend that got us up to the VIP, which is how now I know Rufus, and like, get to go to all the Rufus shows in Australia, because I didn't even know you were going to be there. We were just like dancing in the crowd, and then you were just like next to us with your mom, and I was like, what the hell?
We did a partnership with Rufus for those three nights they did at the Bank of California when they sold it out for three nights, and we had like a VIP area and June Shine available, because we were again trying to sell as much product as we can, and those guys had reached out and they're like, hey, this is a product that we love, and we wanted to have it involved in the show. So yeah, it was fun. But yeah, I mean, again, I'm just all the way around super lucky. It's more often than not I'll be up at weird hours doing meetings or calls if we're on the road and things like that that just have to happen, but you make it work where you have to make it work. And I think again, it's just like, I think I keep saying it, but like, get thrown in the deep end and just kind of figure it out.
I think it's such a great story, man. I appreciate you sharing it. It's so nice to learn your kind of journey and where you've come from, but I think it's such an inspiring one for people out there who are a bit lost of where they want to go or how to maybe get into tour managing or how to get into marketing. I think your story just comes back to being a good human. Be friendly to people, help people out where you can, be a sponge, willing to learn, and be willing to take a step backwards if it can springboard you forward in a different direction. Like, you never know where you're going to go if you have to take a little step back, but build skills. And hey, look, now I'm bloody tour managing one of the biggest musicians in the world just because I've, been open to, meeting new people and building a relationship with people.
Yeah, I think that's it. Again, like, I think that the relationships that go so far, and it's a lot of these opportunities or things I've done, or even when I'm the success I've had at companies, is the relationships that I have with people that I can reach out to and be like, hey, would you, whether it's somebody who has a huge audience and it's like, hey, would you post about this thing? Or hey, would like, you want to be involved in this thing? Or hey, I only have a smaller budget for this one. Like, when you have relationships with people, they're so much more willing to help and be a part of those things with you and go along with that process than if you're just like
some random person.
You're like, oh, I don't really care. It's, you know, but when it's a friend, you want to help each other out, you know? And I think that the relationship stuff, and I've just been super fortunate. Like, again, I never really go into a relationship looking for like, oh, this person does this or that. You meet people, and if they're good people and they treat you well, then like, you should do the same and try and help out where you can. And like, I've just been super lucky with that. And I think that's opened so many doors. And like you said, just, I try and be very honest about my skill set, but then happy to jump in if someone still feels that like it's the right thing. Like, I'm like, I'm here to learn and try and be as humble about that as possible and not just like get caught up in like, well, I did this or I've done this. It's like, no, just try and learn. Cause again, I often, more often than not, feel out of my comfort zone and then kind of try and learn from it the most I can. And again, I think that's the other thing, is just like, continue to learn.
Yeah.
And take things in and monitor things around you where you can learn from them and how to do better at whatever you're doing, work, life, relationships, all of it.
Right. I love it. This has been an amazing chat. I do finish all of my podcasts with the same question, and I'm sure you probably haven't listened to one of them, so you're not going to know what's coming at you right now. So what does being a good human mean to Eric Tomlinson?
Oh, I think it's just treating people well and going out of your way to help people when you can. Right. I think that's probably what being a good human means to me.
No, very well put. Well, I'll leave in the show notes for anyone who wants to find your social media and learn a little bit more about your life. But you are a pretty underground guy now, and just sort of do your thing and have all little things going on everywhere, which has been amazing to watch. And mate, it's been amazing to catch up while you're here in Australia. I said to you yesterday, you've been staying at my sister's house next door to me, where I live in her other house next door. And I've just been so fucking busy this week, so I felt really bad that we hadn't really got to spend much time together. But as you know, I know how busy your life is, and I'm sure you're probably proud looking at what I...
100%.
Pardon me, what I've done after the surf career too. And it's great that we get to maintain the friendship, and it seems like both of us almost post-surf are more so flourishing in the happier, or maybe not happier, but a healthy, good place in our life. So, man, thanks for jumping on.
Thanks so much for having me on and doing it. I mean, it's so fun to be able to sit down and do this chat properly. So it's cool.
Hey, you legend. Thanks, heaps.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.